HRHeadquarters.ie, the podcast.
Okay, so today I'm joined by Christabel Feeney. Christabel is Director of Employers for Change with the Open Doors Initiative. Christabel, you're very welcome to join our podcast.
Hi, Declan. Thanks so much. It's lovely to be here.
Great. Christabel, Employers for Change, do you want to just explain what they do, what you do for them, and maybe the tie-in with Open Doors Initiative?
Yes, absolutely. So Employers for Change, it's an employer disability information service. We were actually launched in just March of this year by Taoiseach Micheál Martin, Sinead Burke, CEO of Tilt and the Lens, and Francesca McDonough, CEO of Bank of Ireland. And the purpose, I suppose, of the service is to really empower employers with the information and the advice that they need to hire inclusively. So to employ, to manage and to retain staff with disabilities. And we operate within the Open Doors Initiative, which is an organisation that creates pathways to employment for a variety of marginalised groups, including people with disabilities. Employers for Change is funded by the Department of Children, Equality, Disability, Integration and Youth, which means that it's a free service for employers. So the advice and information that we provide, we will provide it to employers in the public or the private sector, and it's completely free of charge. And we do that through both our helpline. We also have employersforchange.ie, where we house a significant amount of information there for employers, really useful information. And we also then would do a lot of outreach, kind of awareness raising programs. We would go into companies, we'd go into both small, medium enterprises, and then larger kind of corporations as well, just to discuss disability, to talk about it, to start creating that kind of awareness, and to answer any questions that people might have. So it's been really, really positive to date. Obviously, it's relatively new. We also have a strategy group, which is made up of both disability stakeholders and employer stakeholders. So some of the groups involved in that are As I Am, Chambers Ireland, Chime. We then have two departments, the Department of Social Protection, as well as the Department of Children that I referenced earlier, Enterprise Ireland, IBEC, the Irish Congress of Trade Unions, the IDA, the NDA, Open Doors itself, and then the Small Firms Association. And we're lucky enough as well to also have Sinead Burke and Walk. So you can see from that that there is a variety of stakeholders, but we're guided by them as well in the work that we do, which is really important. And it's important to have both the voice of the person with the disability, but also the voice of the employer to really understand the barriers that employers are facing too.
Absolutely. So let's just talk about a few of the things there. What's the current landscape look like for someone with a disability trying to get a job at the moment? What are they facing?
Yeah, so a couple of things. So first of all, just because I think people often don't realise maybe the figures. So as of the 2016 census in Ireland, we have 643,141 people living with a disability. So that's 13.5% of the population.
Wow.
You break that down further and it's 1 in 7 people. So it's a significant portion of the population.
Sure.
But if you were to look at the number of people who were in employment with disabilities during that same period, only 36.5% of people with a disability between the ages of 15 and 64 were actually at work. And that compares to 72.8% of their non-disabled peers. So you're actually half as likely, you know, to be employed or to be in employment if you have a disability in Ireland, which is really shocking, you know. And we're talking about a figure that's coming from a time when Ireland was probably at it's almost its highest rate or close to its highest rate of employment. So there's undoubtedly barriers there. And there's a couple of things, and I'll break them up between the barriers facing the individual and then maybe the barriers from the employer perspective. So from the individual's perspective, there can be a lot of fear. There can be a lot of fear around kind of, you know, losing a medical card, losing some of your benefits. The cost of assistive technology can be quite prohibitive for people when they're going into employment. And I can talk a little bit later about kind of some of the supports that are there for that. But those state supports for the assistive technology through the employer side of things are actually only open to private sector. So that can be quite prohibitive as well.
Explain that, Christabel. Sorry. So the support.
So for example, you know, we have a couple of things. There is the Reasonable Accommodation Fund, which breaks up into kind of four different grants. And that would include kind of the reasonable accommodation itself. So it goes up to just over €6,000 if you're an employer who's taken on somebody or who has an employee with a disability and they require a piece of assistive technology or an upgrade to an existing piece of software technology. You can draw down that grant, but only if you're in the private sector. So there's kind of, I suppose, an assumption maybe, and that's something we actually earlier this week, we launched a document with IBEC, kind of bringing in recommendations around those supports and how they should be broadened out. Because if you're working in the public sector, you know, maybe, I'm not sure, maybe there's an assumption there that because you're in the public sector, that automatically those supports are going to be provided, but it can actually be prohibitive. You know, it's something that really, it would be ideal for that to be open to all employers, public or private.
And is that, at the end of the day. Sorry to cut across, is that borne out in the numbers you mentioned earlier? Is there, what's the breakdown between private and public sector for people with a disability in employment?
I don't, that's not a figure. I'm not even sure.
No, yeah, no worries. No problem.
I'm not sure if that's even a figure that we have. And it's a really interesting question, actually. But it's just that these are some of the things that are coming up. We're doing research. Part of the work that we do is carrying out kind of continuous research. Okay, so that we're guided by that. And at the moment, we're carrying out research on the impact of remote working during COVID-19 on people with disabilities. And we've done that through kind of consultation with both employees and employers in across a variety of sectors, I suppose. But that's just something that has come up. There are different challenges that both people and employers face. And it's trying to get that balance of, okay, how do we, you know, how are we creating an accessible society for everybody? And if it's meant to be for everybody, then these supports should be for everybody too. But there's also, when it comes to kind of the barriers, there's also the worry, the self-consciousness for people with disabilities around placing a burden on an employer. You know, when we're talking about those supports, that, you know, that they feel maybe sometimes that, oh, they're placing this burden on the employer, or they can feel the burden themselves, that they need to make sure that they get these supports in place. And then you also have just attitudes. And I think attitudes is probably the greatest barrier of all, where maybe an employer has had a previous experience or they have no experience. And then you have the environmental kind of barriers as well. So, you know, the physical structures of an organization, remote working has created huge opportunities for people with disabilities. But I think what we've probably forgotten a little bit is that actually work and employment, a huge part of that for all of us is social inclusion. So it isn't just actually about economic inclusion. It's also about social inclusion. And at the start, certainly at the pandemic, you could see that maybe employers were trying to find their feet, totally understandable, very new to some people, had never really had remote working within the organisation, but really understanding the importance of keeping all of your employees connected. So, you know, when you're doing your Zoom meetings, when you're doing your team meetings, do you have captioning, for example? You know, have you got employees that have hearing loss or are hard of hearing that you might not even be aware of that, you see? But actually ensuring that those moments aren't lost, where people aren't dropping off from the meetings because it's a bit uncomfortable for them. They don't really want to say it. They don't want to say that they're having those difficulties. So there's many barriers, and I don't think that there's any one in particular. And I mean, when we're talking to employers, I think it's so important to say there is a want out there amongst employers to get this right. Like, I really think we need to acknowledge that, and that there's a desire to be more inclusive, but there's also a fear. Like, a lot of employers are fearful of getting it wrong or maybe offending somebody, or a lack of knowledge in the area, and just a general lack of awareness. And sometimes when people are worried about getting it wrong, they decide it's better to do nothing at all. So that's really what we're trying to tackle head on, is saying, look, we will have conversations with employers. We will go in and speak to managers. We will speak to staff. We'll do the 40-minute conversations where it's, you know, it's a safe space for people to ask questions. Because if somebody doesn't have direct maybe experience of disability, they're uncomfortable because they're just, there's that fear. And that's a huge obstacle for people. And that's one we're overcoming, hopefully.
I can totally see that. I think people are definitely fearful of putting a foot wrong or completely unintentionally, and maybe they stop asking questions because of that. So I think it is good to have that forum for them to ask questions that, you know, maybe in a more public domain, they'd be fearful or slightly fearful, you know, that they'd almost be shamed for asking it, but they genuinely want to know the answers. So if I'm a person with a disability and I'm currently looking for a job, there's barriers right from the outset, though, isn't there? A large part of my background is recruitment, so I'm aware that there's some potential barriers there straight away if it's an online application system, things like that. Just talk me through briefly what other types of things companies could do, perhaps, or the flip side of it, barriers that people are facing, just even in that application stage, that getting your application in, that interview stage.
Yeah, so there's a couple of things. And there's a couple of things that companies can do. Look, everybody is kind of operating remotely at the moment, and everything is online. So one of the first things I would say is a company's website. That's the kind of the front door, I suppose, to their whole operation. And if somebody with a disability comes to your website to apply for a job or to look up information about what you do, and kind of your general ethos and qualities, or, you know, your general ethos and qualities, like, if they're immediately faced with a barrier where your site isn't accessible. So, for example, you know, there are websites that companies are using that use a lot of imagery. There's no alternative text. So if you're using a screen reader, the context is completely lost. And why would anybody apply to an organization where they feel at the very outset that it's not really inclusive of them? So that's the first thing. The second thing I would say is kind of the job application. So actually the job spec. And that's kind of the first point of any recruitment process, is really putting the job spec together. And we see it time and time again where companies will put in, like, you know, must be a strong communicator, but actually the particular job may not require that skill set at all. It can just be kind of a nice to have thrown in there. And we would always say to companies, it's really important that when you put your job spec together, that you are describing the job, not the individual that's going to fill it. And, you know, that makes it more inclusive automatically. And really understanding that a job doesn't have to be done in one set or particular way, because when we're talking about disabilities and people with disabilities, we're talking about really creative thinkers. We're talking about people who navigate their lives in often a much more difficult way to non-disabled peers. So kind of really broadening your mind to how a job, I suppose, can be done, and doing that at that early stage is really crucial. Like one example I would often use when I'm kind of talking to employers is Agatha Christie. So Agatha Christie is probably one of the most famous novelists of all time, has written so many wonderful books that have been published, I think, in something like 90 different languages. And she actually had a learning difficulty, which meant that she wasn't actually able to write the books. She found it very, very difficult to write. And an assumption we would make is that, well, God, the last thing you're going to be is a writer. But she just dictated all of the books at a time when that was probably unheard of.
Yeah.
So to just really get your mind around that idea that we don't all have to do things in the exact same way to be successful. And then I would say that even, you know, looking at the kind of shortlisting stage. So that can be a really big barrier because, you know, your CV might look a little bit different. It might, for example, you know, there might be kind of, you might have different qualifications. You might have gotten your qualifications in a different way, or you mightn't have the same amount of job experience because, you know, you find it difficult actually to get that work. So kind of, I would often advise companies, if possible, where possible, really think about giving opportunities to people who share that information that they have a disability. Give them the opportunity to have the interview. And then assess at that stage if they're suitable for the job. And you do that as well by making sure in the job spec, I should have said that, in the job spec, saying that you're an inclusive employer is important. Saying it at the start, not just putting it in at the end, but saying it at the beginning of the job spec, we are an inclusive employer. We encourage people from all backgrounds to apply to these roles, and also providing a contact for somebody who has a reasonable accommodation or queries, because you may need to provide that application in a different format. It isn't a one size fits all. And then I suppose the last kind of element of that process is your interview stage. So again, like, are you asking kind of double barrel questions? Because we would advise against that. That can be quite difficult if you're somebody who's neurodiverse and you're kind of been asked a question that's broken up into two or three parts. That can be quite difficult to process. Making sure that you're asking the same questions to everybody. It would be just fantastic.
Sorry, Christabel, when you say double barrel question, you mean tell me about a time when you did X, Y, or Z. Tell me what the process looked like. Then tell me what the impacts are. So multiple questions in one almost.
Yeah, exactly. Okay, yeah. Exactly, yeah. And then we'd also say, like, it's really important that the interviewers have disability awareness training. And I think actually that's important for a variety of marginalized groups, that you'd have your interviewers really, really, like, in a space where they understand kind of barriers faced by people from a variety of marginalized groups. With the disability awareness training, there is a support there from government. It's the Disability Awareness Training Scheme. And that's a grant that goes up to €20,000, again, for employers in the private sector, that they can actually draw down for training staff. So, you know, there is an opportunity there for employers to actually get that training for their employees, get it for their managers, make people comfortable, normalize the conversation, I suppose, so that it, you know, people aren't getting nervous at the idea of, you know, speaking to somebody who might have a reasonable accommodation requirement. But all of those things create that accessible recruitment process and create that accessible environment. And then when a person is hired, to have a good induction. So, you know, making sure that you're given adequate kind of training, making sure that a person knows if they have a difficulty, who they go to, really looking at kind of the reasonable accommodation process. So a number of companies used the reasonable accommodation passport, and that's a document that was brought in by the Irish Congress of Trade Unions and IBEC a number of years ago. And it's this kind of live document that it allows the employer and the employee to have a live document of what the individual needs. So it means that if you're an individual with a disability, you come into the organisation, there's a reasonable accommodation passport, you fill it out with your manager, for example, say stating kind of what your needs are, and then that's continuously assessed. So you come back every couple of months to say, okay, this is working, or maybe I don't require that anymore, but I could do with something else, whatever it might be. But what it really means is if you're in an organization where there's a lot of movement, the person doesn't have to reshare those details over and over again.
Yeah, brilliant. Yeah.
And it just it kind of removes that stigma, I suppose, and that barrier of, God, I have to go and try to talk to somebody else about this now. You know, nobody wants to do that. So that's, I think, a really useful document. And a lot of companies, funnily enough, during COVID-19, actually started to use it across the board. So not just for people with disabilities, but actually all employees. If you need an adjustment, maybe it's the primary carer for your children, they're now being homeschooled and you need to kind of change their working hours. People said, or employers had said, look, we're going to actually try this out. And it worked really well because that brings down your staff turnover, which, look, it's great for every company to reduce staff turnover. And it's just it's really good practice. And like so many things around accessibility and disability inclusion, what we're doing is actually great for everybody. You know, it creates an environment that's really positive for all of your staff. And that's been proven. Research has proven that.
Yeah, so much good stuff there, Christabel. You're right, and so it's actually a little bugbear of mine. As I said, my background, a large part of my background is recruitment, and it always fascinated me that people would have a presentation as part of the interview process for a job that has practically a zero chance of ever doing a presentation. So, you know, I can see parallels with what you were talking about earlier, where people are asked about strong communication, I think, was your example. And, you know, maybe it's a data processing job, you know, or maybe it's something that just doesn't need that particular skill set. So I completely get that. From an employer's point of view, what are their obligations?
Yeah, so there's a number of pieces of legislation. One would be the Disability Act 2005, and that places a statutory obligation on public service providers. And that's to support access to services and facilities for people with disabilities. But public service bodies are also required to promote and support the employment of people with disabilities, and also to comply with the statutory code of practice that's approved by a minister at any given time. But within that, there's also an obligation on them to make up at least 3% of the workforce in terms of people with disabilities. That actually was raised again under the Comprehensive Strategy for People with Disabilities, that report 2015-24. That was raised from 3% to a minimum of 6% by 2024. So that's one kind of piece of legislation. Another then that would probably affect more broadly, maybe your audience, would be the Equality Employment Act 1998-2015. And that prohibits discrimination under 9 grounds in employment, including vocational training and work experience. And one of those grounds is disability. So they may not discriminate against employees or potential employees on the basis of any of those grounds. And it also aims to promote equality, so ban discrimination, ban sexual and other harassment, ban victimisation, make sure that suitable facilities for people with disabilities are available in relation to the access to employment, advancing in employment and taking part in training. So it isn't just when the person is in employment, and also to allow positive action to ensure everyone gets full equality across the 9 grounds. So it's within that act as well that there is an obligation on the employer to provide reasonable accommodations. And it's taken into consideration, you know, the size of the company and the number of employees that you have in determining what is seen to be reasonable. But an employer can't, under that legislation, can't just assume that they can't provide the accommodation, which I think is really important for employers to hear.
Yeah, I think some of the facilities available within the software that's on a lot of people's computers, people mightn't be aware of that in terms of what's available to them.
You're right. And also, again, it's important that they understand that they're obliged to go and actually seek out contact their local Intreo office to find out what supports are available to them from the department. Or they can obviously contact Employers for Change. And we house that information on our website too. We've kind of a one-stop shop where you just go to the website, look at the grants and schemes available from the state, and they're all listed there, and the application process for them is all listed there as well. But just that's really important, because it can be easier sometimes to maybe assume, well, we can't provide that, but actually you definitely can't do that under the legislation. Also, there's the Safety, Health and Welfare at Work Act 2005. So that states that employers must ensure, as far as is reasonably practicable, the safety, health and well-being at work of all employees. And taking into consideration, you know, like, you would need to do a risk assessment. So looking closely at what's in your place of work, or what work activities are involved. Can any of them cause harm to employees or visitors? All of that kind of stuff. But you're also in the context of maybe looking at being accessible or more accessible to people with disabilities, think about like your alarm system, for example. So if we were back in more normal times and we were in an office environment, if you only have an alarm system, a fire alarm system, where it makes a sound, but actually there's no flashing light, that's not, you're not really complying there, because if you have an employee, and if there's an employee within the organization, for example, who's deaf, it's really, really difficult for them to identify. So you'd need to be looking at kind of, what are your procedures? Do you have a procedure in place with your employees to ensure the safety of everybody being evacuated? Things like that. But again, that all comes down to ensuring that you have a risk assessment and a risk assessment needs done on your organisation. And then there's the UN Convention on the Rights of Persons with Disabilities, which came into force in Ireland on the 19th of April 2018. And that states that any of the state parties signed up to, that they must recognise the rights of people with disabilities. And that looks at disability too through a social lens, which I'm very conscious of. We're only on our journey to really understanding what that social lens is in Ireland. So kind of saying that, look, we're not looking at a medical model here where we're saying that we're trying to fix an individual, we're trying to fix a person with a disability because we're looking at it through a medical model. We're actually looking at ourselves. We're looking at our attitudes. We're looking at society. How are we building things? So when we talk about maybe a person or an employee who is a wheelchair user, and we're looking at a building that has steps and no ramp, it isn't the wheelchair that's actually disabling that individual. It's how we've built the building. So it's really, that's the disabling factor, is how we're doing things and really understanding that and trying to get our minds around that. And doing, you know, making those changes has such a good effect for everybody. Like, I can't stress that enough. Even when you're talking about a structure, like a ramp into a building is actually makes that building more accessible for people with prams, for, you know, people who might just have some degree of mobility difficulty, whatever it might be, but it just makes it accessible for everybody. So we are currently, Ireland is currently drafting its first report under that, under the UN Convention on the Rights of Persons with Disabilities. But that also would guide a lot of kind of the legislation that would come in to ensure that we're compliant with what has been set out in that as well.
Fantastic, and we'll link as much of this stuff as possible under the podcast. Christabel, I think as well, just something that I was thinking of as you were explaining some of that stuff. For a small company and for a large company, this probably looks like a slightly different problem, but it's still the same fixes that need to go in place. But for small companies, probably are like, think expense and all that, and I get that, but you know, even the simple step of going to your local Intreo office and finding out what grants are available to you is a very positive step in the right direction. With that in mind, what can, as you know, most of our listeners are HR professionals, what can they be doing right now to make a difference in this space?
There's two things I'd say to you. One, just about the small company, if you don't mind.
Yeah, of course.
We have a really good example on our website. We have a section on our website called Voices of Experience, and we have employers and we have employees with disabilities talking on that, and just giving their own personal perspective. And one really good example is FHM Accountancy in Gorey, County Wexford, and it's a small business, and they come on and they talk so positively about being inclusive and disability inclusion. And they have an employee called Cora Breen, who's a lifetime wheelchair user. And she's a trainee accountant. And when you hear her speak, it really opens kind of your eyes and your mind to the idea that reasonable accommodations aren't actually this big thing. So for her, for example, she will talk about the fact that, look, it's on the ground floor. That's fine. It's accessible, the building itself. That when she came in, they said, is there anything that you need? Is there anything, you know, any accommodations? And they made a decision that they would change their filing system, right? So they've changed the filing cabinets from using four drawers to using two drawer filing cabinets. And that has meant that she just can go about her day freely, independently, can carry out all of her work. And that's a really small thing. There isn't a huge cost to that. But actually, a lot of kind of research ahead have done really good research in this space, and they have found that I think 2/3 of all reasonable accommodations requested in employment have actually had no cost. So a lot of the time, it's a person may need an adjustment to working hours, may need an adjustment to just how they carry out the task. So just for employers to understand that, I know you're thinking there's, you know, a huge cost, but that's 9 out of 10 times that's not the case. And then in terms of HR professionals and what they can do, I would say just kind of be open to learning, be open to understanding. If you're listening to this and you're thinking, I don't know enough, or I'd like to know more, or we're not doing enough, or how can we do more, just contact us in Employers for Change. We're more than happy to go in and speak to an organization. We'll go through in more detail kind of how you can maybe change your recruitment processes, what you can do around your induction, all of that stuff. We can go through that with them. But really, to just, if they could do one thing today, I would say, look at what processes you have in place. So if you're a HR person within an organization, go and actually take a look at the website. For example, there's really good free tools that you can get online, where all you do is pop in the URL of the website or of the landing page that you use for your job applications, and it will give you a free report. So it will actually do that for you for free and tell you how accessible it is. And if that was one thing you could do today, that would be great. And the second thing, if you haven't gotten disability awareness training, 100% look into it. It will open your eyes so much, because we have found that so many people, when they talk about disability, they automatically assume it's a physical disability. You know, in Ireland in particular, for some reason, when we hear disability, we just automatically think, okay, wheelchair user or somebody that's blind. But disability is, there's such diversity within disability itself. There's a variety of hidden disabilities, you know, mental health illness. It could be somebody who has epilepsy or dyspraxia, or, you know, has some form of neurodiversity, or it could be somebody with long-term kind of chronic pain. So there's a variety of disabilities there. You yourself could be in HR and may not recognize that you are living with a disability. That's kind of how new this kind of subject can be to a lot of people. So just opening your mind and being open to understand, and maybe asking yourself some of those uncomfortable questions around, you know, do I have a bias? Is there something I could be doing better? And do I really understand?
Absolutely. Christabel, what's the best way to get in contact with Employers for Change?
Yeah, so you can either contact us by email, info@employersforchange.ie. You can contact us on our website, employersforchange.ie. Or as I mentioned earlier, we have a helpline. It's 085-157-9603. And you can contact us on that, either call, text, WhatsApp, or if you're a person who would prefer to request a video call, you can do that by text either.
Fantastic. And as always, we'll link all of that information below the podcast. Christabel Feeney, Director of Employers for Change with the Open Doors Initiative. Thanks so much for joining us, Christabel. I think what you do is amazing. So keep up the great work.
Thanks, Declan.
HRHeadquarters.ie, the podcast.